This episode of Rockcast is brought to you by Rock Partner Fishhook, providers of website design and development services. Connect with Fishhook today at rockrms.com/partners. Welcome back to Rockcast, the podcast where we take you behind the scenes with Spark Development Network, give you updates on Rock, the product, and the community, and basically keep you in the loop. I'm Emily Foreman. I have John Edmiston here today, and we have lots of exciting updates that are kicking off the new year here for our team. So we always have to start with, where are we with Rock?
Well, we have a lot of things going on right now. So 10 has obviously been out and out in the wild. People are upgrading, and that's great. We have 10.2, lots of new things going into 10.2, a lot of bug fixes in 10.2, and some new features in 10.2. A lot of people have been asking lately, what is the release date for 10.2? And on point releases, we really don't have like a schedule. We put it out when it's needed. Either there's enough bugs that need to be squashed and put out that we put it out. Right now, we're trying to hold back a little bit longer because there's some more things that we want to add to it before we release it. We've been in several features going on at once, right? We had 9 and 10 kind of in co-development, and 11 is actually in development now. So we're kind of untangling some of these feature sets and trying to get enough things into 10.2 that we can build off of in the 10.0 branch. So one of the things that's kind of interesting is on these point releases, we can't make model changes in Rock unless we plan it ahead, okay? So we can't make model changes in 11.0 until we finish making model changes in 10.2. You can only have that model change like token is kind of how we refer to it in one place. So we're kind of holding back and adding things into 10.2 so we can build more and more features in 10 that won't require 11. And why do we do that? It's mainly because there's clients who want things added to core that everybody's going to be able to get and take advantage of, but they have specific due dates. Mm-hmm. So for instance, you know, camp season's coming up. That's something that we've been really planning for, and there's some new tools that we want to add. And so that's kind of holding up a 10.2 going out. If it was just simply like a bug patch thing, we probably would start to release it now. But we want to hold on to it just for a couple more weeks before we send it to alpha and beta testing so that we can get the framework or the foundation built for some of these new features coming out. So that's why it's taking maybe a little bit longer for us to put it out there, but there's so many good things in it, and it's gonna add features, but it's actually gonna have the foundation that we can build more features on before the summer season. That said, 11 is still going. There's lots of features being put into 11. It's pretty active back here, and it's a little bit difficult to kind of figure out like which branch are we putting this into, and you know, there's a lot of communication going on to making sure that we keep everything straight.
Yes, it's definitely fast paced around here, and the planning required to build in what feature goes where, how we map it out, how we hit a church deadline, how we hit internal deadlines, and keeping that all flexible in real time is a challenge, but it's pretty exciting to see it come together.
Yeah, I mean, even this week, there's a lot of deadlines that we're working on. In fact, that's why, you know, Nick's not able to join us today. He's right now actively working on a very big project for a church that has a deadline that's, and everything's going really smooth. So it's great to see that, but unfortunately, he couldn't be with us today.
For good cause.
Yes.
Well, if anyone who's listening here has a desire to see what happens around here and at the same time really influence their skill set in the Rock world, the masterclass that's coming up next, the first one of 2020, is really something that you want to be a part of. Mm-hmm. It is held here on premises. You have the opportunity to tour our offices and say hello, but you also have the opportunity to sit in a classroom with a small number of people, with a Rock instructor who's on our team to help you really understand how to administrate and use Rock and understand its feature sets so you can go back home and be the trainer of your trainers. There are a lot of people who've told us this is on their wish list for this year. We haven't yet seen all of those people sign up for this class. So one thing to be aware of is the way we typically see our registration patterns. They fill up pretty quickly at the closer to the end. So if you're considering doing that and you just haven't gotten your registration in yet, I know it's been the holidays. It's been very hectic. Getting the right approvals in place and getting all those things done has been a bit delayed. But I would say you'll probably want to get on that here in the next few days because we do expect to see that class filling right up based on the feedback we've had from the community. Also, I think it was the fourth quarter of last year where we broke 100 overtime masterclass grads. And we've been able to really see the rise in the community at the same time online in chat. And it's pretty exciting. So definitely something you want to be a part of, something that benefits you greatly in your job. If you are on a staff with a church that's using Rock, benefits the community, benefits everyone. A huge asset to your church, though. So make sure and get signed up for that.
Yeah, plus the weather is amazing right now. And this is a perfect time to come out. And these classes really do bring a sense of community just to that class. We all go out and eat on one night, but we really find that the people who come to these classes, they stay in this like tight group, and then they meet up with each other at the conference, and it's kind of like a lifelong little group that they go to for questions.
It's their graduating class,
right? It really is. It's cool to see that community.
Mm-hmm. Everybody shares contact information and has their little go-to group, so it's definitely a huge asset,
right?
And speaking of things you don't want to miss, we have to talk about the Rock Conference coming up this year because we are putting so much work into it right now and we're very excited about it. You know, it's going to be a little bit different this year in that we are working based on feedback we've had for years on how to restructure things so the whole community can be together around the clock in one space. And I think this year we've really landed on a solution that's going to be fantastic at the Renaissance Hotel here in the Phoenix area. Stay in the room on premises, go to the conference sessions during the day. We're in great communication with the event planners at the hotel space to make sure we have all sorts of open areas and seating in the evenings for people to connect and some really fun things planned to help with community connections in the evenings. So this is an absolute must.
Yeah, and the lobby space that we have is like six stories tall. We can be there all night just talking, and there's some really great just spaces in that area that people can kind of either stand or sit and have little breakouts. I'm really excited. It's there's not going to be a lot of sleep those nights. This is going to be solid community time.
It's going to be fun too. It's going to be pretty fantastic. And we'll have some things we'll do to help facilitate some of those interactions and some off the cuff. So there'll be lots of opportunities and angles to take on that.
Yeah, one interesting thing that we're also trying to add is we named it Rock Experience because we really wanted for people to be able to experience Rock. And we've had that. Like I feel like we've done a pretty good job with that. But this year we're going to really break it out. So we've already been in talks with Zebra and some other vendors to come out and have more expo. So you can kind of see the actual printers. You can talk to a Zebra rep. You can ask questions about
very
it.
Very cool.
I think so many times we see all these printers that they have, but we always go with the standbys because we know they're going to work and everybody's using them. But sometimes you're like, I wonder what that would be like. I wonder if I could just hold it, touch it, ask some questions about it. I might be interested in that one. We want to have much more conversations around that so you can see, touch, not just printers, but lots of different things. Zebra's going to bring out some tablets and lots of cool stuff, and we're trying to get some other hardware and software folks to actually see, touch, play with at the conference.
That will be fantastic. That'll be a little bit different than just experiencing it through maybe our registration or check-in or some other things that we've done. The real hands-on experience I think will be highly beneficial. So that said, if you are a vendor listening to this and you have hardware that interacts and is compatible with Rock, reach out to us if you'd like some booth expo space at the conference, and we'd love to chat. We are definitely right now actively getting our sponsors put together for the event. Mm-hmm. We are actively working on our speaker lineup. Many of you may have been contacted by us. If you haven't been and you have a topic or two that you have in mind, something you've learned as a best practice, a project that went really well at your church in Rock over the past year, please do reach out to us and let us know. We're anticipating needing around 60 or so speakers this year, probably a few more. So definitely are interested in hearing what you have to say. If we've asked you and you haven't replied yet, it might be just because you're thinking about what that looks like. That's all stuff we can iron out as we go forward. We also need some people that can volunteer to help in tracks for people who are new, and helping with a few things like that too. So if you know you can, if you know you'll be there and you could help us out with some of that, that's fantastic. Whether or not you have your topic in mind, let us know. And we may have some opportunities where we need someone to help with something and we already know what it is too.
Yeah, and I think one of the exciting things about this conference, talking about the expo, talking about the speakers, is I feel like this is like the first time where space is not a limitation.
Yes.
It's really, what do we want to do? And there's so much space that, I mean, the conference expo area with the vendors and where we'll be eating is so big. I mean, you could play 2 hockey games in there. It's so huge. And it's just nice not being limited by that.
It really is. We've always taken the feedback seriously that we've gotten from people after the conference in our surveys. But some of the things we've had to say, yeah, I know that that would be really nice, but we do have a limitation on space or on, you know, some other type of thing that we haven't been able to address in the past. And we've really kind of blown some of those limits out this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pretty fantastic. So if your registration's not in place, please do set that up. If you're a sponsor, check out our sponsor page and look at the options there. Reach out if you have questions about anything. We expect to have a lot more information with speaker lists and that type of thing up on the website in February, early February. So keep checking back to see as our tracks and speakers begin to evolve and be made public.
Yeah, super excited by it. And it's we're actively working on it major right now. Like lots of time has been put into this. So it's, I feel like the conference just happened, but in a sense, like it's close to happening again.
It is. Oh, and I almost forgot to mention, we are doing a fun event for the community the night before conference starts. So when you're booking your travel, make sure you're coming in Monday morning at the latest and you're staying through Thursday morning at the earliest. Otherwise, you're bound to miss something and feel regretful about it and not be able to make those last minute changes to accommodate.
Yeah, we've always intentionally made it a 2-day conference. I mean, I think most people would probably make it 2.5 days, but we really felt that that extra half day is always, when they do that, is always kind of the wasted time. And we're really trying to compact this in. So don't try to compact it further.
Right,
because it's already compacted tight.
A lot of people treat that extra half day as sort of optional anyway, and that's, you know, not really fair to the speakers and not really what we were going for. So don't cut off extra time, I think is...
Right.
A good message.
You've already booked all that time and squeezed it in.
Yes. So get your conference registration in and book your hotel rooms. You have to do both of those. You don't want to be staying somewhere else. You want to be staying right on site, or you might be missing the whole point of what we're doing here, which is to keep everybody together. So make sure and get those registrations in. There are limited room registrations, so you'll want to do that sooner rather than later.
We've worked really hard to get those room rates really low.
We really have.
I mean, it's a great deal for that hotel.
Absolutely,
that's a huge deal.
Yep. So if you have any questions about anything and that's been holding up your registration, reach out, let us know. We'll help you get the answers that you need on those.
Yeah.
So it's 2020. It's kind of hard to believe. I'm still kind of having shock. Every time I write the year down, I have to pause for a minute, sometimes scribble it out. I know I'll get this soon. I'm working really hard on getting my brain up to speed with current dates. But the other thing that we've noticed beyond just the year changing, the calendar changing, is our dev team is growing.
Yes. Yeah, so we've, in the last week, added an additional developer to our dev team, and we're about to add another one next week. So this is the fruit of many, many months, literally many, many months of searching and interviewing and praying for. So, and it's finally coming through, and it's pretty exciting. In fact, the one that's coming tomorrow, we've been talking to that individual for, gosh, I feel like it's over 6 months. waiting for the right time and just waiting for the timing to be right. So really excited about the additional horsepower to the team. That always in the beginning, that ramp up is, it takes time and energy, but we're excited to do that and to build out the team further. And then even long-term, it's, you have now more horsepower to have to pour fuel into, like, mm-hmm. features, and make sure your architecture and requirements are all typed up and ready for all the additional work that they can do. But we're super excited by the individuals and mm-hmm. what they're going to be able to contribute to the team.
Definitely. It's exciting too, because I think this shows out the faithfulness of our community in buying the vision of what we're doing, in supporting it, in continuing to show up, in really buying into the model. All of this is possible because of the community. And so we're excited to be able to begin paying that back mm-hmm. in with the composition of our team and the work that we're able to do.
Yeah, and I really hope that those churches see us as an extension of their team. I mean, mm-hmm. we really are. And so in a sense, they're getting two additional resources
right.
to their team, which is going to allow us to move a little faster and also be able to do more on both the professional services side and on the core side.
Absolutely. What an exciting way to kick off a new year.
And those two sides two sides of the same coin, because the professional service side is really adding stuff into core
right.
that everybody gets. So it's interesting how, you know, they often seem like two different things, but in actuality, they're just the same thing.
Right. And we've had people say before to a developer on our staff or two, are you a core developer or are you working on projects for churches? And our developers can't really tell you they're one or the other, because our projects are all part of the same release cycles, and everybody works on something here and something there. And so we don't really divide the team up that way.
Yeah. And I think over time, it does seem, it might just be a trend temporarily, but maybe not, that the amount of custom work we're doing that doesn't go into core is actually going down.
Right.
Almost all that work is in core. And that's pretty cool. And just the amount of churches saying, hey, I really want to build something, not just for myself, but for all churches, is just unbelievable. And even some of them are saying, hey, like, if it takes a little bit more time or money, I want it to be used for everybody. Just let me know. Let's talk about that. And that, again, blows you away.
Absolutely. That is fantastic. And then we have these interesting conversations about development cycles and timing. And that's one of the reasons, as we were just talking about, that we build these functionalities into our dot releases so that we can continue to fill those needs for the churches we're working with.
Yeah. A lot of times it kind of feels like, you know, trying to have to arrange all the pots to catch everything, because you got to do it in a certain way because there's certain limitations. It's almost like a puzzle game that you have to do.
Right. So, it's very much like a puzzle game.
Yeah. With different rules that you can't do this unless you do that. And so it's kind of fun, although I'm looking forward to having fewer spinning plates or branches in our terms going. So we're within a few weeks, we'll have a few less branches to have to worry about.
That'll be nice.
Yeah.
Now, all of this takes some serious, as you said, planning. The architecture is a major part of what we do around here. And we've mm-hmm. begun talking about it a little more because it is such a major thing. And we reference it a lot. Like, we're not just going to build something for today. We're going to build something that interacts with everything the right way and is as future compatible as we can make it. So we've started to field some questions about what our architecture best practices are and the way we do that. John, can you share a little bit about what you're thinking about on that front?
Yeah. So I think in one of the last podcasts, we were talking about how we're trying to flesh out some of our best practices. And a lot of it goes back to stuff you're working on with the team in terms of having a codex, which is kind of a fancy weird term we use for like a document of all of your lessons learned for each of the different areas on our team. So every team member here at Spark is now working on a codex. And it could be that some of them are working on it together and as a small team of people who work on the same types of things. So it might be like a consulting codex, or it might be a technical architecture codex, or a developer codex. We've had that one for a while. But everybody's working on putting these best practices into paper. And I would recommend everybody do that, mm-hmm. even in the community. Some people sounds like, well, why would I do that? Like, I don't need to do that. Like, I know it. But I think from a healthy, mature organization, everybody should have their, how they do their job on paper. Some people would again say, well, why would I do that? Because it puts me out of a job if I, yeah, exactly. Because you should be growing. Mm-hmm. The job you're in today should not be the job you're in a year or 5 years. So you're really helping onboard the person who's going to help you move on to bigger, better things. We always say here too, well, if we keep growing, it's unlikely you're going to be doing the same everything in your job. You won't be able to do that. It's going to be expanding. So you're going to help the person come on next to you. And when that person starts, you can't tell them everything you know because you don't know it. You've forgotten it. You just right. do it. It's part of your habit. There's so many things that I'm like, oh, yeah. No, you need to do that. And that person's been here a year and I haven't told them that because I didn't write it down. So we're going through that. And I think we mentioned it on the last podcast, and a couple people have actually reached out and said, hey, I'm really interested in that. When is that going to be ready? And so we're really surprised and excited that people are excited. So we're going to put together some videos to kind of go over that. But I think in the meantime, we're actually going to, on the podcast, go over some of those concepts. I feel like if we wait for the videos, it's going to take too long. Mm-hmm. But probably in the next series of podcasts, we'll start sharing with you how we, for instance, how would we interview a client to get their requirements? That's a very interesting process. Like, you have to steer it right. Otherwise, you can come out the other side with not enough information, or maybe you have come out with a solution that's not optimal because you listened and did exactly what they wanted and they didn't really know what they wanted. So we have some tips and tricks to gather those requirements. And so we'll share those on the next podcast. But we are documenting that for ourselves, but then we want to make that content available for the community. We're not going to lock it up within the Spark walls. As it becomes ready to be shared, we want to put that out. And so I think we have one that originally we didn't think would be of interest, but maybe it would, is how we do estimating. So we're going to put out a video on 3-point estimating and how to do that. It's really a great tool that gives you tighter estimates, yet still lets you think through the risk of each of the items, which I think is what's great. It's not like random guessing and padding.
So how do you think that 3-point estimating could be applied inside the church world?
Well, I'm guessing that almost everybody listening to this podcast is asked to do work within their organization, or they might have a project within the organization. And of course, every senior leader wants to know how long it's going to take. Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes they may not, the level of that oversight might vary, but the professionalism that you can give back should always be consistent. I mean, even if they're not, you know, breathing down your neck for the deadline, I'm sure they're curious of when it is. And if you can go back to them with a well-considered deadline and talk to them about probabilities of it hitting a certain mark, I think they're going to be impressed. It builds up confidence in you and your role, but it also helps you do your role. So we have a saying here, which seems kind of obvious, but it's so important, that we have a ready, aim, fire mentality. So we always want to prepare our work. We want to figure out how we're going to do something before we tell a client how much it's going to cost. And again, most of you are probably going, really? What's so special about that? But we live in a culture that's ready, fire, aim. We don't like to do that pre-work. We want to jump right in and just start working on it. And that is like literally the worst thing you can do in technology. You do not want to be figuring it out as you go. I mean, literally, your code, your solution, your workflow, whatever you're doing is going to be not good if you're figuring it out as you go. And I have to be honest, I think in the past, we've struggled a little bit with that, and we've had a lot of rework because of that. You know, our standards are high, so we're never going to let that work go out, but it means that we had to rework stuff or refactor stuff. And you don't want to refactor something that hasn't even seen the light of day yet.
Right.
And that's telling you that you ready, fired, aimed. And there's just in our culture this huge desire just to get started. And we feel like we need to get prepared. I think there's a famous quote attributed to Lincoln that I'm probably going to butcher, but he basically said, hey, if I was given an hour to chop down a tree, I'd spend the first 50 minutes sharpening my axe. And that's what ready, aim, fire does. It just really is sharpening the axe before we use it, making sure we know exactly what we're going to do. And that 3-point estimate is the starting point, really, of that. Once you get the requirements, which we're going to talk about maybe in another podcast, it's really, how do you plan that estimate? That's so key.
So if you find yourself painted into that proverbial corner, it might mean the next time around, add to your expectations of planning.
Yeah. And I think it makes it more defendable, because I think when you watch the video, you're going to see that it's really helps you get a number of hours, but then it can give you a confidence level too. So, hey, you know, here's my number of hours. I feel like it's going to take 20 hours, but it could be as high as 24 or as low as 16. And you're going to have like true facts and statistics to back that up. And so I think and showing that risk will make maybe the spreads even wider, and your senior leadership would be like, well, why the huge spread? And you can break down your work. Well, here, you know, here's the things I'm uncertain about. I know what I'm going to do, but I'm uncertain how long it's that those things are going to take. And I think when they see that, they're going to have confidence in that, okay, you're just not like being lazy or padding your estimate. I mean, that's the worst thing that we don't want to do either. We don't want to pad our estimates because of uncertainty. We want to approach that uncertainty in a structured way, mm-hmm. and make sure that the statistics back it up. And, you know, uncertainty is a fact. But when you're just kind of like licking your thumb and sticking it in the air and going, yeah, it's about, you know, let's add some, you know, add 6 hours for padding on that. Yeah, that's scary.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause that level of planning means either someone's going to overpay, or you still didn't do your due diligence and think it through, and you're going to come in lower. And now that's, you lose money on the project. If we lose money on the project, that's very bad, because we're a nonprofit.
Right.
And, you know, we didn't pad it. And also that means someone else has to pay for that. And we don't want that, you know?
We also don't want a scenario where one person takes requirements and gets an estimate in place that everyone agrees to for an amount of time. And then someone else has to do the work and realizes that it really wasn't, the solution wasn't mm-hmm. well fleshed out.
Right.
And that padding can't necessarily make up for that. Sometimes it's something isn't possible a certain way. And the rest of the action items inside that project require that first part to be feasible, and maybe it wasn't.
Right. And that's again human nature too. Like, we're very free with other people's time and stress, and sometimes not as much with our own. So I always try to when I'm trying to estimate, like I'm imagining me doing it. Mm-hmm. Like, how would I feel about this estimate? And then I play other games, like, okay, well, if I had $1,000 wager on that number, how much tension would I feel? Now, I don't let me pad the estimate, but I just use it as a tension factor. Like, okay, I'm feeling tense about that. So let's reconsider this. Maybe I need to go in and do a little bit more work to figure out exactly how. Maybe my tension is about, I'm uncertain about how I'm going to do it. If that's the case, stop. Like, the risk factor of a 3-point estimate, if you don't know how, that's not why you're putting risk in there. Go figure out the how. It's more about like, okay, I know how I'm going to do it. I'm just not sure. Like, maybe I'm setting up DNS, and last time I set it up, you know, I had problems with my DNS service, and that took me a little bit longer. It's for planning for things like that, those types of uncertainty. Never for like, well, I need to do workflow, I'm not sure how I'm going to do it. You know, I would plan out, okay, these are the major actions I would use. And because if you have to ever fall back to using like a SQL action in a workflow, it's going to take longer than a normal action. And you need to know that.
That's a good point. So all of this is basically telling us, I think, that plan for a considerable amount of time in planning,
mm-hmm.
and the whole project will go better.
It's sharpening your axe. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not sure if you've ever chopped a tree with a dull axe. That's not fun.
I haven't ever chopped a tree with any sort of axe.
Really?
I have not. I have to confess.
Chainsaw?
No.
Mm.
I do have a sister who is certified in chainsaw chopping. Chainsaw? I don't know.
I once built an addition onto my uncle's log cabin, and we went out to the forest and dragged the trees out. And so a lot of chainsawing involved. And I have to say, he was really good. Like, every time we went out, the night before, he's out there sharpening his chain and bringing extras. And like, that guy was very well prepared. And it's amazing how much a chainsaw will cut with a sharp blade versus a not so sharp blade.
I feel like I need a field trip at this point.
Yeah. Jackson Hole.
All right. We'll have to get on that later. All right. So we've been having some great conversations with the team also as we kick off the year. And John, you ran across something super interesting that you brought back to the team at our most recent staff meeting about our mindfulness loop. And it was a concept that I hadn't thought of ever before, but it really resonated. Can you share a little bit about that?
Sure. It's probably a concept you hadn't heard of, but but you do it. Like, it's built into the way you think, which is which is what I think was fascinating to me when I read about it or watched a video about it. So it was New Year's Day and I was, you know, just watching some YouTube videos trying to figure out like, okay, what's going to be different this year for me? And it was more on planning and thinking patterns. And this one guy said, hey, as one of his ways of how successful people get things done is wait, the concept he called the mindfulness loop. And he basically said successful people have a mindfulness loop running inside their head and they're constantly have these dependencies in their life. So my dependencies might be something like, and I think there's two levels. There's a macro level of dependency. So mine might be, well, I'm the technical architect working on rock. So that's a pretty broad thing, right? And then there's micro dependencies. I need to work on this feature for V11, maybe digital signatures. That's a micro. It's very, very down in the weeds. But we have these dependencies, and basically what we need to do, successful people do, is they think through these dependencies all the time. So they're every week or every day, they're okay, as a technical architect, what do I need to be doing better? Like what needs my attention? What do I need to be pushing on? And so they're constantly in their head putting these dependencies through a mindfulness loop. And they're always, okay, what do I need to do next on this? What do I need to do next on that? And I find that I do that a lot. Like I'm driving pretty much all day. I'm just thinking about something else. Okay, what do I need to do next on this? How can I make this better? And I'm keeping notes and I email myself like constantly. Like over the weekend, I might email myself 30 times different ideas or articles or things to research. And so what he's saying though is if you don't have that loop yet, and I mean yet, because you can get it, there's a way you can get that. And that's first to be intentional is to map out your dependencies at the macro level and the micro level. And then you want to set up time on your calendar, block it, do it, and think through all those dependencies and say, how do I need to push this forward? What can I do next? What's waiting for me? You know, there's a lot of entropy. Systems without having energy poured into them like go into chaos. And that's basically what this is saying is that you have these dependencies, whether you like them or not. They're assigned to you. You have them. People are expecting them. And they may not all be work-based. It might be even like, you know, raising your kids or your marriage. And if you don't pour energy into them, they're just going to just go into chaos. And I think that's kind of what this principle is about. And the successful people I know, I can see them doing that because they're coming proactively saying, okay, we need to worry about this or that. I mean, you do it all the time, even like small things like this podcast. You're preparing what we're going to talk about. You're preparing the special guests. No one's telling you to do that. It's in a mindfulness loop where you're thinking ahead and saying, okay, what do I need to do to prepare all this out? I think the light bulb moment for me was just hearing it articulated.
Definitely. I've never heard that spoken before, but it is very interesting. And I think maybe if you do that today and you haven't thought about it, it might have originated from pain points in the past. Mm-hmm. Because building that awareness helps to keep you from getting hit upside the head with something unexpected in an area where you were supposed to be on top of it and you weren't. Sometimes that happens and you don't realize that some responsibility was handed off to you or that it exists in sort of this weird netherworld and nobody cares there. but it will impact you in the future. So I'm pretty sure I can look back on things in my life and say, oh, that was really painful. I got hit once or twice by that one. And I thought, how do I prevent getting hit the next time? And over time, you kind of build up these mental processes and systems where you're like, got to check in on that again. Make sure that's not going to hit me or hit someone else that I care about. And over time, this framework kind of gets put together. It'd probably be pretty hard to just grab the framework and wear it immediately without that awareness and without kind of building up, start with those pain points and say, how can I make this better in the future?
Right. It's really developing that habit if you don't have it. And for those who don't have the mindfulness loop, they're basically letting life happen to them and then they're forced to react constantly. And I think that's kind of what you just described is this, you got hit on the side of the head and you had to react and then you realize reacting just doesn't work. I mean,
no, there aren't any good options left at that point. You have bad choice A, bad choice B, and bad choice C. Which one do you want
to
take?
And you might be able to survive your career or your job. At that point, it's probably a job and a career. But you're constantly, it's not fun. It's like this tension of always being hit by the brick and just learning to buck up and take it versus getting out ahead of it and realizing you don't have to be in the way of the brick. You can move.
And that's true for projects and tasks, but I think it's true for relationships too.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times we look back on a relationship that feels like it's crumbling suddenly and think, where did this come from? How did this happen? And then if we look back, we realize, well, maybe we weren't giving it great care and feeding over time.
Yeah. And I think the person who was doing the video was really, he mentioned that a lot of this, right, people who have it might've come from their childhood, that their parents instilled it either. Most of it not intentionally, but sometimes, you know, unintentionally. He references a moment when he looks back and his mom, one day he's a teenager, and halfway through the day, his mom yells up from down below, "Hey, did you take a shower yet today?" And he's like thinking, like, of all the things to say right now, like, why were you thinking? But she had a mindfulness loop. Have my kids bathe today. Like, you know, that all of a sudden it comes to her mind in her pattern of mindfulness loop. And he thinks that by living in a culture like that, it kind of developed these things. And I can look back at my childhood and I can see that. Like, my parents definitely had a mindfulness loop that I can probably say I inherited through nurturing, right? Sometimes nurturing might not be the right term. It might be bricks. you get thrown enough bricks, you're like, okay, die. But it's a gift. You know, right. I joke about that, but it really is a gift.
It's learning to anticipate those things. Okay, so that gives me a lot of hope that at some point my 9-year-old son will develop a mindfulness loop about his own dirty socks.
Yeah. When I think my mom would probably, she would have been shocked to know that I probably got a mindfulness loop, you know, in my younger years, because I was definitely like...
It didn't exhibit quite yet.
Yeah, and I think, you know, sometimes you have a mindfulness loop. Some people have mindfulness loops, but they choose not to listen to them. You know, that was probably me. Like, I knew I should do that, but I'm not going to do that, you know? And then over time, you mature, hopefully.
That's flexing a little independence, maybe.
Or laziness, one of the two.
Yeah, sometimes they're interwoven.
Right.
I want to try that out for a while. I want to see what being lazy feels like right now. Oh, painful. I got hit upside the head.
Yeah,
definitely. Well, it is fun to see that kind of thing develop in your kids, and I'm not sure it's fun to see it develop in yourself, but it does feel like gaining competence.
Right. And I feel like the more you do it, the more success you're going to see. And, you know, I can think back to my career. In my long career in IT, I knew people in previous jobs who, yeah, looking back, it's like, I don't know if they even had an idea that the future even existed. Because they never, ever, ever prepared themselves for it. Mm. They always put themselves in situations. You're like, what? You didn't plan for that? Like, I remember working at CCV, the senior pastor, Don Wilson, he would always say, it was so true, he prepared for every single meeting he went into that day, sometimes a week ahead of time. And he already knew what he was going to say. He knew what the other response was going to be. And he would have his second tier points already prepared. And in the beginning, I thought, well, that's a lot of preparation. You got a lot of meetings. Like, that's interesting. But now I really can see how that is helpful. He's already prepared himself for all those meetings. There's no surprises coming. And I look back and I'm like, that's really smart.
I know I've developed some things just, there are a lot of tools out there basically that will help with all of this. And I'm a task oriented person, so I have to use a mindfulness loop to remind me to check in on my relationships, not because they're not important to me, but because my brain always goes to, oh, check off all these things on the list and then I can go be with the people, because I love people. I'm an extrovert. That's not a very successful pattern. It's just the way I know that's my default. So I use a lot of tools to help with my mindfulness loop in that area because that's my intention. It just isn't always my natural wiring. So I use all sorts of different tools for everything from like renew this prescription so I don't have, you know, a gap in a prescription for somebody that I'm responsible for, or I use reminders 3 weeks out from the birthdays of my friends and family. So I know that those are coming and I have time to do something. So I've even built in, I used to have a reminder on someone's birthday. Then I would get hit upside the head with that if I wanted to like send a gift to my niece or nephew. And so I built in like time frames on that. And that's, you know, so I have those on a personal side too, as well as on a business side. And I've over time adjust them and think back, did that go right? Did that not go right? How could I make that better? And eventually you kind of have this framework that helps you do life the way you want.
Yeah, that's a good point that you can automate some of that too. And, mm-hmm. and if you can, you should.
You should. And you know, oddly, I struggle with guilt about that sometimes. Like, oh, that should be natural. I should be remembering that is coming and preparing for that and doing it. And guess what? life is moving way too fast for what should be natural to be relied on. And so I would say use your human skills of, you know, of empathy and of relationship and of all of those kind of things, and then rely on technology for the parts that it can do. Mm-hmm. And then you have more capacity to dig into the really human characteristics of interacting with people. And
yeah, I mean, the human brain is not good at memory, but ironically, computers are.
Right.
And in terms of creativity and innovation, mm-hmm. people are really good at that, mm-hmm. and computers not so good. So like, this is using the right storage mechanism and tool.
So anyway, I found that concept super helpful, and I will be more intentional about it going forward. So I appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah, it makes me want to even do better at that too. But I think from a team perspective, it's helpful that we can all do that, because it helps us backstop each other more.
Right.
Otherwise, the person with the mindfulness loop becomes the backstop.
Right.
And that's not really fair to that person. Plus, it's not using them to their best. It's forcing them to become the mom or dad in the situation to say, hey, your socks are still on the floor, when it's not our socks. Like,
right. And it makes sense if you have a 9-year-old, but not really in a working environment.
Right. It's kind of embarrassing.
Right. It also uncovers some things like assumptions. Maybe I'm assuming you've got it, you're assuming I've got it, nobody's wrong, but the ball's about to drop and we wouldn't know it if we weren't, you know, having a conversation and adjusting our mindfulness loop.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, thanks for sharing that. That was wonderful. You also had a couple of really cool quotes that you shared at the last staff meeting. I was hoping you could bring today too.
Yeah, and some of this, you know, we can probably go and unpack in more detail when we talk about how to interview clients, but there's a great graphic designer who does a lot of great videos to help you become a better not just a designer, he just certainly does that, but more of a better leader, a better consultant, which is that even if you work in a church ministry, that's what you are, you're a consultant to your ministry staffs. And he said that as you're talking through a solution or a need, that understanding is more important than speed. And so sometimes I think there's a real rush to try to get those requirements, and you want to just kind of move on, but you don't quite fully understand it. And the message there is slow down, like make sure you understand exactly what they're saying. And maybe even talk about that in the beginning, that, hey, I really want to understand this, so it might take a little longer, which kind of goes into the next point, which is, give voice to feelings or frustrations. They tend to diminish those frustrations and feelings and reduce the intensity. And so we call that internally calling the foul. And so basically saying, hey, speak words that describe the foul, and that therefore it removes the frustration to it. Mm. So, hey, here's my fear in the end. As we roll this out, there's gonna be some turbulence here, and we just need to make sure that you're aware of that. It's a difficult transition, and so we're gonna do our best. We're gonna try to get as much of it taken care of ahead of time, but there will be a few things that we need to clean up. If you say that, it takes away all the frustration, not all of it, but a lot of it when it actually happens. If you never say anything and it happens, they're like, that's unexpected now, right? So now right. The tension is like, hey, wait, this is broken, this is broken, this is broken. And I remember back when we rolled out Rock to CCV, or at CCV, I had to do a presentation of a month ahead or 2 months ahead about the transition, how it's going to go. And one of the things I said is like, we're going to change the engines on this plane in mid-flight. You know, if anybody wants us to let us land for 2 or 3 weeks and not do any ministry, we'd be happy to do that. But we really don't feel like that's what you want. So we're going to change the engines mid-flight. It's okay. We're not going to crash, but there will be a little bit of turbulence. So I just want to call that out. Okay. And it went really well, because the day of or the week of, we did have, you know, a couple little things, nothing major, but if I hadn't said anything, I think there would have been issues and concerns, but we literally had people run up and say, hey, this isn't quite working right. Is that some of the turbulence you were mentioning? And it's like, yeah, exactly. It is. I mean, and because we gave it words, and because we gave voice to that, it just neutralized a lot of that tension and frustration. And I think that's so important. And sometimes we know those things, we just choose not to say them because it might be uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. It's 1/100 the uncomfort level saying it ahead of time than when you have to say it in the moment, because at that point it's hard to trust that.
Right.
It's easy to trust someone who calls it ahead of time. And sometimes you might call it a foul that maybe doesn't even happen. Like maybe right. that thing didn't happen, but you could say, hey, what could happen? What commonly happens at this stage is we can see these types of things. Or if we don't plan it well, this could happen. And if it doesn't happen, it's okay. They probably even forgot that you said it. But when it does happen and you said it, it that linkage comes back. So it's better to talk through that, what the things that could go wrong. And so we really, that's one of the key things we always talk about, is call the foul ahead of time.
We do, and it's very effective. And speaking of effective, the first quote that you mentioned resonates with me, because I feel like we're always supposed to be balancing this tension of efficiency and effectiveness to do something right. Mm-hmm. And if one wins out entirely over the other, the balance can be off and something can go sideways. So it's interesting to think about if you go too much toward efficiency, like get it done fast instead of get it done well, sometimes, at least for me, I can tend to start applying a filter that says fast is good, slow is bad, like a morality filter, right? And that's not true. Or even a stewardship filter. Like if I do this faster, I'm having better stewardship over the resources that I'm responsible for, and I want to have the best stewardship possible. But if you spiral with that too long, you're suddenly sacrificing your effectiveness for efficiency. And that isn't great stewardship. And the morality filter that I sometimes will find myself sliding toward needs a check, because it's not accurate. Mm-hmm. So I just think that's a really good, succinct reminder of the balance that we need between effectiveness and efficiency.
Yeah, that's really good. And I don't think there's a right answer to that. I think sometimes what people might think of as the morality filter, and I'm putting myself into this too, is that, is it a morality filter or is it just a rush to get it done? Sometimes it is, like you said, I'm just trying to be efficient and effective. But sometimes it's like, sometimes the planning and some of these things that we talk about are like the vegetables on our plate. We don't want to eat them.
They can be.
And so trying to figure out ahead of time the understanding, because I literally can put myself into situations where I didn't want to continue to understand what the client was saying, because it hurt. It was like complex, and the everything inside your head is just screaming like, don't worry, we'll figure that part out later. And that's when I try to pump the brakes and say, no, I have to figure it out right now. We're no closer to understanding this than right now. And to have to get back to this point is going to be hard.
And brutal.
Yeah. But I've seen a lot of people do it, and I've been guilty of doing it. And I, in my head is screaming, just figure that out later. And that's when I have to say, okay, I don't mean to be difficult, but I still don't understand. I'm sorry. Can you explain it even further? And I can think of situations on large projects in the past where everything in my body was screaming, just leave the meeting, go to the restroom and never come back, because it's so difficult. And it's not that the client's being difficult, it's just that the task is difficult to understand, and it's frustrating because I don't understand it and I want to. And that's when you just have to keep going. Like, you'll get out the other side eventually, but don't say, we'll figure that out later when we need to. Your future you will not be happy.
Right.
And the client won't be happy. Your customer won't be happy.
That's a good point. One of the mental models I'm trying to apply is I love maps, right? I love them. I think they're fascinating. They represent all kinds of interesting things to me. They're intriguing. I have a mental map for time. Time is like gold to me, because I have a lot of responsibilities in a lot of areas. So I have a mental map with time, and I feel like I can allocate certain things to certain places. And if I don't keep that balance right across everything, then I feel out of whack. So I am trying to create an overlay on my time map that is a strategy map, right? So strategically, yes, this could fit into this crack right here of time that I have to make myself most efficient, but strategically it deserves more than that. So could I make that happen and be super efficient with my time? Yes. Is that the best answer in this case? Probably not. So I'm finding myself doing like, what kind of map overlays can I put on top of things to be more strategic about how I allocate my time?
That's really good. I don't think I'm that strategic with how I think about my time, which is probably a bad thing. Sometimes the only thing you can't manufacture or get more of.
Right.
You can get almost anything else in the in this world more of it if you need it, but you can't do that with time. And I have a tendency to just go, well, I'll just add more time, whether it comes from my personal time, or and which is unhealthy and bad. And that's interesting. I should probably think about that more.
Well, if you can manage your margin, you can manage your life. Mm-hmm. That's what I've determined. But sometimes that means if you really try and there's some amount of tightening you can do in your margins, and then you can obsess about it and you can start creating problems instead of solving them. So that's, I don't know. There you go. There's my vulnerable state about my time mapping.
Well, in a lot of this, it was really speaking towards just doing the prep work ahead of time, going back to the axe analogy. And he had another great analogy, Chris Du, is that the outcome of a fight is determined in the gym, not the ring. And that is so true in fighting, and it's true in project management too, that the outcome of the project is going to be done in the preparation stage, not necessarily in the development or the work stage. If you put that time ahead of time, and I've seen that in life too, the more we've prepared a feature ahead of time, it just goes so much more smoothly through development. But that's the area, honestly, when I look out, I see little preparedness in some of the projects. Where's the requirements document? Where's the mock-ups? Where's the, how are you going to do that part? Oh, I don't know. I think we'll just make a workflow that does that. What actions will you be using? I mean, you'd be surprised. I feel like I probably know all the list of actions pretty well, probably in the top 10 percentile of, you know, the community, but I'm always inside the sample workflows, like just adding new actions, making sure I understand all the inputs that they have to make sure that everything's lining up and what I'm trying to do, right? So I'm confirming all of that ahead of time so that when the person goes to do it, they're not left with like, John, like you, this doesn't work because we don't have this input. It's like, oh, oops, sorry. That would be embarrassing for me.
Right.
So I'm always on the pre-alpha and demo sites, you know, tweaking things to make sure that all the things line up.
Wow, we just unpacked a lot today.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the calendar switchover has triggered for all of our listening audience, but for us, it has definitely triggered some reset in thinking in why and how we think. Greg with Healthy Growing Leaders talks about thinking about thinking, which when I first heard that concept, that was too much thinking for me. It was very deep, but I'm starting to understand what he means by that. And the thinking about things like our patterns, our ways we approach things is just, it's so healthy to give some time to that and to consider, is this the best approach as an organization, as an individual? And so we're putting a lot of effort into that this year. And I'm really excited to see where that takes us.
Yeah, well, it's the start of a new year. And my biggest fear is I want to be different at the end of the year than I am at the beginning. And that means I have to be intentional about how I'm going to grow and what am I going to focus on. And we also sit at the beginning of a new decade.
Right.
So I think it's really interesting. I play a game in my head too. I was like, okay, the 1920s, what's my perception of that? Well, and what was the perception of the 1910s? And it seems like those are so drastically different, but it doesn't seem like that when you project it to the 2000s and 10s and the 2020s. Like, but I have to remember that these are the, like, decades are big. And so how do I make sure that in the end of the 20s, the 2020s, how am I going to be different? Like, that's a scary thought. Like, we've got to get working on that.
There are miles to go before we sleep.
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for tuning in and indulging us in our conversation here today. We're very excited about the community and the growth that we see there, and anything we learn that we feel could have benefit to everyone. We just want to be really open-handed with knowledge and insights that come our way, and we figure that's better together. Thanks for tuning in. This episode of Rockcast is brought to you by Rock sponsor Secure Search and Safeguard from Abuse, providers of background checks and child abuse prevention training. Connect with Secure Search and Safeguard from Abuse today at rockrms.com/sponsors.